The therapists are trained to talk to them and help them navigate those things, which is building independence while, you know, still looking to your parents for advice. And so I think that's the beauty of therapy, is it's a very safe space for teens to talk.
Are you raising your family while also feeling like you're still growing up yourself? Do you wonder if you are getting it right? Or do you ask, where's the roadmap to building a happy, healthy life? Welcome to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. She's a pediatrician and a mom, and she helps the whole family.
Hi, I'm Dr. Sarah Adams, a board-certified pediatrician, but I'm not your pediatrician. Feel free to use my podcast as helpful information, but in no way do I intend my podcast to replace the advice of your physician. Your physician knows you and is in the best position to provide medical advice. Welcome back to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. I'm Dr. Sarah Adams. I'm so glad you're joining us for an important and timely conversation about the mental health of children and teens. Nearly one in five young people in the United States experiences mental, emotional, and behavioral conditions like ADHD, depression, anxiety, OCD, and mood disorders. For many families, finding the right support can feel overwhelming. But early and compassionate intervention can make a world of difference. So today, we're diving deep into these challenges with a special guest who has dedicated her career to helping children, teens, navigate this mental health journey. She'll share how she's built her practice around treating these diagnoses, what she's learned from working with young people, and the practical advice she offers parents, caregivers, and communities supporting their mental wellness. I'm so happy to have with us today an experienced psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner, Emily Breeding of Woodstream Wellness. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you so much for having me here today. I'm so honored to be here and talk about the amazing kids and adolescents that we're treating.
Thank you so much. And according to recent data from the CDC, which for those listening is the Center for Disease Control, nearly one in five children from ages 3 to 17 have been diagnosed with a mental, emotional, or behavioral condition. So how do we approach these initial assessments with our young patients and their parents to ensure that they get a comprehensive and accurate diagnosis?
Well, you know, I think with those statistics, it's so interesting because those are kids that are actually diagnosed, right? So how many children are out there struggling with depression, anxiety, mood issues, difficulty with focus? How many of those kids are out there that haven't been identified and aren't seeking treatment? I think, you know, us growing up when we were younger, a lot of the things we're going through, like if you're feeling down or if you're feeling anxious, back then we just kind of kept it inside and thought we just have to try and figure out how to deal with it on our own. But today, I think the stigma has decreased, and we want to encourage our kids to talk to their parents, talk to their teachers, talk to their providers. I think one neat thing that's happening in a lot of the pediatric offices there is they're screening kids earlier these days.
Yes.
And they're better able to identify when they're struggling, when even they're at just a regular follow-up visit. And I think if those prescribers and those providers out there can get them referred to places like my practice, where they can look into medication management or therapy, I think early intervention is huge in letting these kids know a lot of the things they're feeling is normal, and helping them navigate that process so they don't feel so alone.
I have found that ADHD, anxiety, depression are the most commonly diagnosed disorders, right? What trends are you seeing in these presentations and in co-occurring conditions?
Oh, yes. So I think we think of things like, oh, this person has ADHD and then this person has anxiety, but it's all intermingled. It all goes together. And so maybe you're struggling to focus because you're so anxious and worried. Maybe that academic pressure of getting good grades or getting into the right college is making you so anxious you can't focus. Or maybe You're so unfocused and you can't think about the things in your head. Like you have trouble figuring out what to do first and then actually executing those things. And because you're struggling, you end up, you know, not being able to focus, and you feel anxious about it. So lots of times ADHD and anxiety overlap, and then maybe all of that makes you feel down about yourself. So I think getting in with a provider who can help you tease out what's the root cause of the problem and then how do we fix it?
Absolutely. You bring up such a good point, distinguishing what's really normal behavior, whether it's a normal response or reaction to what's going on in their life, or a normal developmental behavior from symptoms that really require intervention.
So what I like to tell these kiddos and the teenagers that come in is it's normal to have down days and it's normal to feel anxious sometimes. If you're feeling anxious before a test, that's a good thing, right? Because that drives us to study more and to do well on the test. But if you're getting to the place that you're feeling down more days than you're not, or you're feeling anxious almost all the time, or maybe you're so anxious that you're becoming irritable and frustrated, that's when you really want to reach out and be like, I think I'm struggling a little bit, or I'm just feeling down almost all the time. That's when we really want to maybe start working with a therapist or look into medication options.
Absolutely. And what I tell parents too is, especially when it really starts to affect their function. Yes. As you know, one of the questions, just as a primary care pediatrician, that I like to ask is, do you still enjoy doing the things that you like to do? And that's a big question when they say they don't. And kids, you know, are so full of joy and energy. Yes. And when I see that really being interrupted, I always tell parents that that's a red flag.
Yes. And in my initial visits, I almost always ask the kids that I'm seeing, what's your favorite food? What do you enjoy? And we'll talk about things that you do for fun. And I'm like, tell me things that make you happy. And I think that's a really good indicator as to whether they're struggling or not. Because lots of times I'll have kiddos that can't think of anything. And I'm like, what? You know, and I'll tell them, I love to watch this show, or I love to take a hot shower. I love to go on a walk in the evenings when it's nice out. What things do you enjoy? And if they're struggling to come up with things, or they can't think of a food that they even like, then that's really a big sign that they
sounds
might
like
struggle.
Yeah, that's a great way to ask that question. And parents can even, I feel, can use that as well.
Absolutely. And also I like to ask the kids, how many times a week are you showering? Are you getting up? Are you getting out of bed? Are you doing your hair? Because lots of times if they're like in bed all the time, they're just on their screens and they don't even have the motivation to shower or brush their teeth, we know that things are maybe declining. And that's where parents can come in too. And let us know, yeah, I think things of, you know, I think she might be struggling a little, or, you know, he might be really anxious or really worried about things. And it's a good way to identify what's going on.
And you mentioned also that early intervention is important and how it can shape your treatment plans for these conditions. What do parents and caregivers need to know about that?
Absolutely. If they're starting to see things, just to reach out right away. I think it's kind of easy to be like, oh, this is just her. She just likes to lay in her room. She's a teenager. She doesn't like to talk to me much. It's normal teenage, you know, experiences. But really, we want to encourage these kids to be out of their room and interacting with us and talking to us. And I mean, it's normal for them to pull away a little bit, but we should at least know what's going on in their life. And I think it's very easy to let teenagers sit in their rooms and be on their TVs or their phones or their laptops. But then lots of times they're getting sucked into a lot of the struggles out there. And we want to encourage them to interact with us, eat dinner with us, tell us about your day. And if they're not able to do those things, that's a point where we might want to encourage them to see someone.
It reminds me of even my own son. He liked to spend time in his room, and his name is Ben, and we called his room the Ben Cave.
Yes, right.
But I will tell you, he did, you know, go to school every day, showered, like you mentioned. So it reflecting back, I see what you're saying. Like he would join us for dinner. He would attend his sporting events.
Yeah.
Even though he did like his room, there was a balance. And I think that that's a great way to look at it.
Absolutely. We want their rooms to be a safe space for them where they can go and just decompress and relax, but we don't want it to be the only place they are.
Yeah, that's a very good point to make. Can you give an overview of how treatment for something like OCD or other mood disorders might differ from treatment for more common disorders like anxiety and ADHD?
Absolutely. So something that a lot of people don't know about OCD is it's not always just lock checking or worrying about leaving your curling iron on. Sometimes it's repetitive thoughts that can be very intrusive and things that we don't want to think about. And for kids, that can be super embarrassing and it can be things they don't want to share. And so it's something they just kind of hold tight to and have to struggle with internally. And I find this with OCD a lot is I work with these patients and I really try and build a rapport with them and spend time with them so that they feel comfortable telling me the things that are going on in their head. And it might be a thought that pops in their head over and over again, but it's not a thought they want to have. And so I think building trust with these patients and letting them know they can tell us what those thoughts are and they're not going to be judged. And there's medications and there's therapies and treatments that can help them better manage those thoughts so they're not weighing so heavy on them. And so that can be a little different than like a generalized anxiety or feeling down here and there because, you know, you're going through something. Sometimes OCD can be a really heavy thing for children to carry because they're embarrassed to talk about it.
I would imagine, too, that, you know, again, that could be another thing that maybe someone could easily write off because how many times have you heard people even, I don't want to say the word joke about it, but they'll say something like, oh, I have OCD or things like that. We hear it all the time. We hear it all the time.
I keep my room super clean. I like my pencils a certain way. I have OCD, but it's not always that.
If you're looking for information as you're navigating the issues we're discussing here today, please check out the description box below where we'll share resources to help guide you through these moments. And please like, subscribe, and share it with others so they'll have access to this useful conversation as well. If there are topics you'd like for me to discuss here on the podcast, leave a message in the comments section below or email me and I'll include it on a show episode. Many adolescents report unmet mental health care needs despite increasing awareness and discussions with healthcare professionals. What barriers are families facing and how can they advocate for their children's mental health support?
You know, I think that there's so many barriers out there, but I think insurance can be one of them. And I think there's this preconceived notion that it's going to be super expensive for your child to go to therapy or to see someone like a psychiatric prescriber. But a lot of the practices take all the insurances, no matter what. So I think lots of times it's just a copay or it's just covered by insurance these days, which is a great thing that has happened in the world of insurance.
Yes.
And lots of therapists take insurance as well. And so also, I think there's this, they're going to make me come and talk, you know, hours a week and it's going to take up all my time. And I can't balance all of this with me as a parent trying to work and get my kid to all their sports. But there's all kinds of ways that the children can engage in therapy and there's lots of virtual options. Sometimes you can meet in person once every couple months, but the rest of the time the child can log in and talk to a therapist in their room. And so there's, you know, despite the barriers, I think there's so many ways we can help kids these days just by talking to your pediatrician and encouraging them to seek help at one of the offices.
You bring up two very important things, the insurance and time. And I like to tell families too, check with your employer because many employers have a system or support for not only the employee themselves, but for their families as well, that includes some free therapy sessions that as well, which can be so beneficial.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's also just trying to find the right provider for your child. And now that we have the internet, you know, we can look up and like on our website, we have like a little information about every provider. And so lots of times getting your child engaged in the choices. So like, who do you think would be a good match for you? And who kind of fits your personality? So they're a little bit more invested when they go in and they don't feel like they're talking to a complete stranger. They read a little bit ahead of time, like, oh, this person is probably good for me. I think that helps too.
Yes. And usually there's a picture. So you kind of get a sense, like, does this person look like somebody I can engage with? And this is such great advice. What other practical advice would you give parents who suspect that their child is struggling but really don't know where to start?
Yeah, I think just reaching out to their child and not in an accusatory fashion. I lots of times like to encourage parents to kind of share some of their experiences. Like, you know, when I was in high school, I really felt nervous a lot and I didn't really know why. And sometimes I would get anxious and it would make me irritable. So making it more about themselves and not, you know, lots of times adolescents can feel kind of attacked if you're like, you're acting this way. But if I'm like, I really kind of went through this when I was in high school and I wish I would have had a safe place or someone to talk to, kind of broaching it that way. And just being an open person for your child to talk to, you know, that way they feel more comfortable reaching out to you and you can better set them up with someone that's trained to talk to them about what they're going through.
And I feel that's so important because that, again, brings back like parents and that relationship with the child that they realize like, oh, you went through that too. And and so that's such an important point to let them know, look, I struggled as well. And I really want to help you. And that's about that support system. So how can parents and caregivers partner with providers to build that strong support system for these children that are facing these mental health challenges?
I think just letting the kids know we're here and we're on their side. I think having open communication with the schools, lots of times kids feel comfortable talking to a therapist at school. And so improving those communications between the parent and the therapist, and just letting the kids know that it's safe to talk to us and not using that against them. Like, well, you shared this with me, now I'm gonna be like, well, you told me this. You really wanna just create a safe space for them to talk and tell you about some of the challenges they're facing at school and with their peers, because their challenges are hard these days with social media. And, you know, they have challenges we didn't face as kids. So just being a safe space for them to come and talk to.
I remember with my kids, it was so funny in my head, you know, they would, I was always telling them they could come and talk to me. And in my head, I'm going, la, 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 la. Like, I don't know if I can handle this, but, you know, just so that I can like mentally prepare myself, because as a parent, it's so easy to just respond to what they're saying. Like, you'll be fine or you're okay. I wish that every time I told my kid, you'll be okay. It's going to be okay. That, that, you know, they would just be like, oh, okay. And they're fine. So really working together. And also what you mentioned is that if you feel as a parent, you don't know what to do, that's where reaching out to your provider and working with them. And, but I want to remind parents, you know your child better than anybody. So the more information you can give the caregivers or the mental health specialists to really help your child, the better. And they're not going to judge or make you feel guilty for anything that you feel you did or didn't do. So the more information you could share, the better.
Absolutely. And I think with the therapists and with my own children, when I've encouraged them to attend therapy, I tell them, this is the fun part. You can go in and tell them whatever you want. It is 1,000,000% your safe space. And I think creating that atmosphere, like, this is a safe space for you to go in and just get it all out. If you're mad at me, if you're mad at your dad, if you don't like our rules, it's a safe space to go in. And then the therapists are trained to talk to them and help them navigate those things, which is building independence while, you know, still looking to your parents for advice. And so I think that's the beauty of therapy, is it's a very safe space for teens to talk.
And there's this new trend or thought process called positive childhood experiences, or PCEs. And we know that they reduce the risk of mental health diagnosis. What tips or daily routines can help families cultivate these PCEs at home?
Oh, it's such simple things. But in today's world, where we're all on our phones and computers all the time and always distracted, I think we forget to just do simple things like checking in. How was your day? What'd you have for lunch? Who did you go out with after school today? Just checking in, and letting them know that you care enough to put down your phone and talk to them is huge. We just have these distractions all day long. And even if it's not intentional, it takes away from the connection we build with our children. And so, I think encouraging time, like, you know, we're going to eat dinner together and we're putting our phones over on the counter, so we're all just going to sit and talk about our day. Having those moments with our children are so huge. And just taking the time to put down our electronics to build the positive moments at home goes really far in who they are later on in life.
That's so true. And there have been studies that have shown that that the use of electronics in parents definitely has an effect on the mental health and wellness of children. And not to say, you know, some people, their phone or the electronics is part of their business. And it's
right.
Just make time for phone-free time and phone-free zones. So we know that it can be challenging. We identify that for sure.
I think, too, if we're not talking to our children about the issues they're struggling with, they're not learning how to become resilient. I think lots of times they just take their struggles, push them down and get on their phone and play games or snap on Snapchat. And then when they get older and they run into real problems, they don't really know how to get through them or how to handle them. And so we want to be teaching our children how to get through the hard times. We don't want them turning to electronics to do so. So even just taking the time to check in and talk to them about the things that they're going through really helps them become more resilient, because they're using their minds and they're engaging with you to figure out how to navigate their way through the difficult things in life.
And I love how you said earlier in our conversation, getting them involved in how they want to really help themselves as well. And I always encourage parents to ask open-ended questions.
Yes.
What do you think would be helpful, right? And because it just engages that dialogue versus the monologue of a parent just telling the child what to do.
Yeah. It was so interesting. I was talking to this incredible mom yesterday during one of our visits, and she really tries to teach her children. She teaches them to say, I'm strong, I'm amazing, and I can do hard things. And sometimes, saying, okay, this is going to be one of those hard things. This is going to be a hard time, but I'm going to get through it because I'm strong and I'm amazing. And she showed me a video of her 3-year-old who was trying to give up her passy. And the little girl repeated that. And, I'm strong and I'm amazing and I can do hard things and I'm going to bury my passy. But teaching them young that there's going to be times that are hard. It's not always going to be easy, but you can come to me. We can navigate it and we're going to get through these hard times together.
Absolutely. I love that early intervention is so important. And we've talked about that. And also in schools and other communities, like how do they play a great role in promoting mental health and well-being among children and teens? And you brought up schools. How do you see this really helping our children?
Oh, I think it's, the teachers are with our children so much of the day, sometimes way more than we're with them because we're at work and they're at school. So they're seeing things. They're seeing how our children are interacting with their peers, or if they're having a rough day, maybe they're sleeping during class. And so encouraging teachers to interact with the parents and also with the therapists, I think it's very easy for the for our children to be on screen time while we're sleeping at night. And then maybe they're going into school and they're dozing off during class. Right. So having teachers reach out to the parents and, you know, I'm noticing this. Are you seeing this at home? But, you know, lots of times there are eyes and ears, the teachers are. Or if
True.
They're seeing a child struggle, or maybe they're getting bullied in the classroom, or they're not engaging with their peers, encouraging a therapist to reach out to that child so that we can intervene early and the child isn't struggling for years without friends or feeling bad about themselves. So I think the teachers and the therapists in the schools play such a huge role in the mental health of our children.
And a lot of times these kids find a trustworthy adult
Yes.
at school or in their community, whether it's through sports or other activities. And
Yes.
and I encourage children and teens to do that, to find an adult that they feel comfortable with,
Yes.
even outside the home, that they can share. And then also, again, building that support and that connection between
Yes.
the school, the community, and the family itself.
Absolutely.
What inspired you? I'm really enjoying this conversation. And Emily, I know you're such an asset to your families. What inspired you to specialize in child and adolescent mental health, particularly with ADHD, depression, anxiety, OCD, and mood disorders?
Well, I've always had a huge love for psychology. It's always been fascinating to me. I became a nurse over 20 years ago, and actually, I was working in a psychiatric hospital. I was working in a residential adolescent unit, and that's actually where I met my now husband. We like to call it love at first psych. But we were working in a unit with these adolescents who were sometimes hospitalized 6 months to a year. And during that time, it was just it was such a blessing. And it was also so eye-opening to see all these children that were struggling with depression, anxiety, mood disorders. And so much of it had to do with things they were being exposed to at home,
yeah.
you know, violence at home, trauma, divorce. And both my husband and I decided we really wanted to pursue a career in psych with the opportunity to work with families and children in the outpatient setting. And so that's where this came to be. And about 4 years ago, my husband and I decided to open our own practice. And we really wanted to be able to bring on providers that had spent a lot of time at the bedside. And we have a lot of nurse practitioners who have spent 12 hours at a time working with patients.
Mm.
And we wanted providers that could come in and really spend time with our patients, with our adolescents and their parents, getting to know them and getting them set up with the best treatment options. I think there's such a push these days in offices to see more patients, and we want to see less. We want to spend more time with people and see less a day, but really focus on those relationships to help these people through life.
That sounds amazing. And as a practitioner myself of so many years, I've seen that shift. And
yes.
what are the most meaningful changes you've witnessed in the field of pediatric psychiatry in recent years?
Oh, I just think that since COVID, I think during COVID, so many people were stuck at home and they couldn't talk to peers. And COVID was a difficult time. But I think through that, more people felt comfortable reaching out for help. And we opened our offices in 2021, so right after COVID. And I think that the stigma has decreased and more children and adolescents are more comfortable saying, I'm struggling. And with that, we're able to serve more people. And I think the kids are more open to talking. And that's the most important thing we can do, because if we can get them talking, we can actually help them.
And I love that that's something that you've built your practice on, is
uh-huh.
really building those relationships.
Yeah.
What other lessons or strategies were crucial in building a practice focused on child and adolescent mental health?
I think the most important thing is finding the right providers, ones that are super passionate about taking care of children. Also, we really wanted to provide a beautiful setting. I think a lot of psychiatric offices, inpatient and out, have a history of being kind of dingy and scary. And we really wanted to provide a beautiful place. We offer play therapy. So we have incredible therapists that are on the ground playing with the kids, encouraging them to talk And having them come into a place that feels beautiful and comfortable, like their home, where they can come in and talk and not feel so intimidated and scared.
That's wonderful. And it makes them want to come back.
Yes,
and feel safe, right. Like you said, that a safe place,
yes.
which really is so important, because especially with kids and adolescents, you know, it, realistically, they don't want to be there, but
right.
they hopefully they understand and know that they need to be, and they feel comfortable coming back and seeing you. How do you keep up with all the latest research and treatment to all these conditions? Because I know it's just so ever-changing.
It is ever-changing, but I think it's super important that we keep learning. And so I actually do some teaching at Miami University. It's also my alma mater. But I think, interacting with pharmaceutical reps about new medications that are coming out, going to conventions, I always want to be learning the newest things and encouraging my other providers to do the same, because there's always new technologies coming out, new medications, new therapy modalities, and we always want to be serving these kids in the best way possible. So a lot of us will go to conventions together. We'll go and learn together and come back and try and teach our peers what we've learned so that we can best impact the children we serve.
And I know that you teach and precept as well. I know for me, teaching other students in this field, and as well as I learn so much, just as much from them as they learn from me.
Absolutely. I love teaching. It's one of my favorite things that I do. And a lot of the prescribers that I'm teaching are family nurse practitioners, or they worked in acute care before, or they worked in all kinds of various fields as a nurse. And so I'm learning from them and they're learning from me. And together we just grow.
And along with those partnerships, could you discuss any partnerships or interdisciplinary approaches that have enhanced your ability to help these young patients?
Oh, absolutely. There's so many incredible programs now. There's a virtual program that is an intensive outpatient program, and it's all virtual. Mm-hmm. It's called Charlie Health, and it's a nationwide thing. But I'll have people that have, difficulty getting to appointments all the time, or maybe they can't go to a program 10 to 3 Monday through Friday because mom and dad can't drive them, or they need to go to school during the day, but they really need a higher level of care than just meeting with myself or a therapist once a week. So now there's virtual programs. And Charlie Health is one of them that's just incredible. There's also programs like NOCD that really helps, children and adolescents that are struggling with OCD. And some of that is virtual, and they will actually be on the phone helping them work through some of these compulsions that they have. And they have someone on the phone working with them. So there's all kinds of incredible partnerships that we have. Where once we see a patient and get to know them, we can refer them to the best place for treatment for them.
I like that. I always love it when a patient comes back who has been, through some mental health therapy, and when they have other things that they can do, or homework, I call it.
Yes, yes.
I love that, because it's more than just the hour or so that you spend with them. It's the continual work. And I tell parents that too, because I say you are their first counselor. And so helping them work through some of these, either whether it's online or some other type of therapy, is so helpful.
Yeah. And I'm a prescriber. I prescribe medicine, but I evidence-based practice shows that the children and the adolescents do the best with therapy in combination with medication management. And so I think finding the right therapist for them and the right, type of therapy is so crucial. And I want them to learn coping skills besides just taking a medication when they're feeling anxious. I want them, whether it's taking a walk, doing physical activity, breathing techniques, things like that really make a difference in them learning how to self-soothe and get through difficult times. And so I want them to be able to use those things in addition to medication options.
Yes, the studies have shown, as you mentioned, that just medication alone, really combining that with the therapy is where you're going to get the greatest success.
Agreed.
How do you incorporate prevention and early intervention strategies into your practice with these rising rates of depression, anxiety, and even suicidal thoughts among teens?
Right. I think that one of the biggest things I do is talk to all of my patients, because the adults are the parents of the children, right? And so letting them know ahead of time, educating them, things they can be looking for, like I said, decreased hygiene, or maybe being in their room all the time, increased phone time. So educating the parents so that they can identify things going on with their children early and intervene early, and letting them know that they can bring their child in and we don't necessarily need to start a medication. We can look at all kinds of other options first, is important, letting those parents know those things.
And I would imagine that helps families and teens approach that stigma around that mental health diagnosis as well.
Yeah, that it's totally fine to talk to your parent, talk to your coach, let them know you're struggling a little bit, and then they can help get you, hooked up maybe with the school therapist to start with and then go from there.
What signs should parents and educators, because you mentioned school, really be looking for that might indicate the risk of like a suicidal behavior or even risk of substance use in adolescence?
What's really interesting is the number one sign for depression in children and adolescents is actually anger, especially in our little folks. So it doesn't always present like tears and I'm feeling sad. Lots of times they're having internal frustrations and sadness, but they don't know how to, express it. And it comes out as rage or anger or irritability. And so I think being on the lookout for that, and then also being aware of what social media platforms they're on, because lots of times our children are expressing themselves via social media if they're not telling us. And so being able to look and see what they're posting and what they're saying and who they're communicating with is really huge to identify if they're maybe, struggling with depression or even suicidal thoughts that they're not expressing to us.
And that is so important. I always tell parents, really know what social media platforms your children are on.
Yes.
Be open about it. Ask them questions. Again, open-ended.
Yeah.
What are you doing? What platforms do you like? What games do you enjoy? How does it make you feel? Because they might really enjoy playing a game, for example, but if it brings up a lot of emotion, or if they tend to be irritable or angry, then that's when we need to go, okay, maybe we need to rethink this and shift a little bit.
And even with music, I think it's great to listen to music, but if you notice that your child is listening to lots of sad things and then they're crying all the time, it's okay to have a bad moment, but we don't want to live there. And so encouraging our kids, okay, take a moment, let's cry, let's get through this breakup, but then we're going to move forward. And so really just being aware of what they're listening to, what they're watching, what they're seeing, and if they're like spending days on end watching sad movies or listening to sad songs, intervening and trying shifting them into a more positive direction.
This has been such an amazing conversation. Emily, what gives you hope in your work with young people struggling with mental health issues?
Oh, I think... so many of these children are resilient and they're reaching out when they're struggling, and that's so huge. And then also what gives me hope is the providers that I'm surrounded by. There are so many compassionate, caring people out here in the world. And I think being able to connect them with the children that are struggling is the most important thing we can do. But I think there's beautiful people all over the place, and connecting them to work together towards more positive things is always the goal. So
what message would you want every parent or caregiver to remember when supporting a child or teen with a mental health diagnosis?
That it's not always going to be easy. It's not always going to feel like, okay, now we're good and we're coasting. There's always going to be ups and downs. But there's so many people out here to help and support you. You don't have to wait 6 months to get in somewhere. Reach out to your primary care. or reach out to a therapist at school and get connected with someone that can help your kid and listen to you and them and, you know, to reach out and get help for these kiddos if they're struggling.
Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your thoughts and your beautiful practice with all of us today.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Whether you're a parent, an educator, health professional, or simply care about young people's well-being, I hope this conversation provides you with practical tools, hope, and a deeper understanding of the landscape of pediatric mental health. Please check out the description box for more resources that you can use. Until next time, let's grow up together.
Produced by Autovita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.